There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When we start thinking accomplice, accomplice is like, I'm right there with you. If we're going down, we're both going down together. I'm with you. So I want the individuals who are listening, who see themselves as allies, let's up that a little and start thinking as accomplice. If you're seeing microaggressions, which we will talk about in a bit, if you're seeing, or if you're hearing jokes, or you know, you're seeing someone who's like, oh my gosh, this person has a new hairstyle. Is it her hair? Trying to go touch someone's hair, right? Which that happens a lot. Say something. Don't just be like, oh, I don't think that was well. Like, say something. Like, that is not appropriate to say. We're not going to do that.
Dedicated to amplifying the voices, stories, and accomplishment of Black Canadians. This podcast is about learning and growing. So let's get into it, shall we? Michelle, I hope all my listeners are doing well. First and foremost, I want to wish my women listeners a happy Women's Month. Now, I know this is being celebrated through the whole month of March. I actually found out, fun fact, that here in Canada, we celebrate Women's Month in October. So, with that being said, if you decide to celebrate it in March or in October, or if you're like me and you're going to do both, we want to wish you a happy Women's Month. Actually, this episode is dedicated to women. Primarily, it is a discussion to be had about for women of color, whether you identify as Black or other ethnicity, Asian, whatever. But this episode is particularly devoted to racialized women. It's a conversation that needs to be had. But before I get into it, it is also March break. So I want to shout out to all the parents out there who are at home or working at home, or if you're a stay-at-home parent and you have to deal with these kids, I'm sending you so much energy your way. I also am home with the kids. I am not off from work. I am working remotely, but I have the kids home, and whew, when the day is done, all I want to do is just curl into my bed, because it is exhausting to have to work and then do all of the things after work with the kids. So shout out to my parents who are going through it for a March break. I see you. I'm sending you all the energy your way, because I know you're going to need it. Now, before we go into today's episode, I just want to pause and remind you guys how much I need you guys to definitely share the episode, that we are going to have a great discussion today, but share it, you know, have the discussion with people, you know, get a mindset as to what they're thinking, you know, pick their brain and definitely create that kind of discussion or dialogue with whomever you decide to share this episode with. Also, if you're listening from Apple Podcasts, if you're listening from Spotify, rate and review the episode. I've said it before, I'm going to keep saying it. Anytime you rate and review any indie podcast, whether it's mine or if you find somebody else, what that does is the more listens we get, the more downloads we get, the more engagement we get. So the engagements are through our comments section. So when you leave a rating, that puts our podcast on radar. So the more you rate and review, then the more likelihood that my podcast can be seen by the higher ups of Apple Podcasts, in which they will be more likely to recommend me as podcasts that you need to listen to. So I encourage everybody to rate and review. If you guys know, you know, my friends at the Raw Sex Podcast, Dominique will always say support is free. It doesn't cost you a thing to support indie podcasters because, you know, we put in the work and a lot of y'all find this entertaining. So definitely support indie podcasters. Support me by rating and reviewing the podcast as well as the episode. What's great is that Spotify has this new feature where you can even leave comments on specific episodes. So not rating the whole podcast as a whole, but just leaving comments on a specific episode that you enjoyed. So continue to do that because that really helps small indie podcasters like me to get seen. So if you're new here, let me explain something to you. It is the beginning of a new month. And so what I do is at the beginning of a new month, I like to highlight a Canadian artist. And I choose a particular song that I think my listeners are going to enjoy. So I call it the Artist and Song of the Month. So the artist of the month of March, in honor of Women's Day, is Havia Mighty. Now, I found Havia Mighty on TikTok, actually. I follow Connor Price, which is actually another Canadian. Now, what he has is a series called Spin the Globe, where he's a rapper and he'll spin the globe, and wherever his finger lands on, he'll try to find a local artist in that area to collaborate a song on. So he's done places like, I believe, Germany, Japan, India, I think South Africa was another one. So surprise, surprise, when he spun the globe on one of his episodes, his finger fell in Canada, Toronto. So he did his research to find who is the upcoming artist in that area that he could collaborate a song with, and he stumbled upon Havia Mighty. Now, I listened to the song. It's really good. I'll make sure to leave a link to his collab with from Connor Price with Havia. So I decided to kind of dig in a little deeper and see, you know, what her music is about and if it's something that I think my listeners would like. And I'm not going to lie, her album is really good. I can understand why people are saying she's a really big artist. She's someone who's up and coming, and she's coming with, like, she's coming to shake tables. She's not coming gently. So after going through a lot of her songs, I thought this might be a nice song. Also, she's Jamaican, so there's a little bit of patois in there. So I had to, you know, honor my ancestors a little bit. So the artist and song of the month is called Room Service. It's by Havia. And just before we get into it, I'm just going to give you a little bit of information. And this is the information that I found on Wikipedia. So Havia, if you're ever listening to this and the information here is wrong, please go on Wikipedia and fix it. Because I by no means am trying to disrespect you. Just trying to give my listeners some insight to who you are. So Havia Mighty is a Canadian rapper born in Brampton, Ontario. Now, for those of you who are wondering, like, where Brampton is, actually, let me go back a little bit. We've got Toronto, and then we've got the greater Toronto area. And so Brampton falls in the greater Toronto area. So she's in the greater Toronto area. She rose to prominence in 2016 as a member of a hip-hop group called The Sorority, before releasing several EPs on her own, most notably Flower City in 2017. Her first album, 13th Floor, was released in 2019 and won the Polarized Music Prize. After her debut in XXL, named her one of the 15 Toronto rappers you should know, and I concur with that. And CBC Music called her one of the new faces of Canadian hip hop. And I'm not even gonna like joke around. Her music is real fire. I could understand she's coming in like a storm. So without further ado, let's get into it. So here is Room Service by Javi Amighty.
Yeah. Hold on just a little for me. Can you TikTok, can you flip it on me? Can you turn back and I kiss you slowly? You the only one ever did it for me. Hold on just a little for me. For me, for. Can you hold on just a little for me? For me. Yeah, you know you're too perfect. Come close, yeah, you make me too nervous. D&D, we don't need no room service. Make you scream, you become a new person. Yeah. For you, I don't need permit. Turn it up, speed it up, and reverse it. When you come, you gon' see your true purpose. I'm still number one, speed dial, don't switch it. For you, I will fight any fine or ticket. Put you in designer, I ain't got no limits. Please don't give that peasant of a guy your digits. Fuck that nigga, baby, we could get flirty. You know how I do, baby, we could get dirty. We could hit the club, baby, we could get sturdy. I'd do anything for you, but you don't deserve it. Yeah, you know you're too perfect. Come close, yeah, you make me too nervous. D&D, we don't need no room service. Make you scream, you become a new person. For you, I don't need permit. Turn it up, speed it up, and reverse it. When you come, you gon' see your true purpose.
Wind up your wheels, make me give you a shot. Make you forget enemy that you want. You everything, yeah, the cream of the crop. So you should fuck with the team at the top. Wind up your wheels, make me make you forget enemy. You everything, yeah, the, so you should fuck with the team.
That ticky tack make me so excited. My enemy, you can't stop this smiling. Your love for me, you gon' make me find it. This Hennessy, you gon' make me violent. I try to let you go.
So tell me I'm not wrong. Tell me that song is fire. And of course, I'm gonna choose that song, right? Just a little sprinkle of patois in there. So you guys could check out Javi Amighty wherever you listen to your music, whether that's Spotify, Apple Music. You can definitely listen to more of her tracks. Her album is really good. Like, I listened to every one of the songs that followed this one, and it's really, really good. So you can find her on Instagram. I believe she's also on Twitter, X, now that it's been changed from Twitter to X now. And I believe she's on Facebook. She also has a website that I know for sure, and I'll be sure to put all that information in the show notes. So today's episode is about microaggressions and toxic work environments. Now, this was a topic, as I'd mentioned, that was referred by one of my listeners who reached out to me. Shout out to her. And she was saying how she would love to have a conversation about microaggressions and toxic work environments. And it's so funny because I was saying to myself, you know what? I need somebody to have this conversation with, and I wasn't sure who that was going to be. And it so happened that this particular guest that we're about to have on the show today reached out to me, and it was just like the perfect timing. So just to kind of give you a little bit of information before we get into it, microaggression is defined as the everyday, subtle, intentional, and oftentimes unintentional interactions of behaviors that communicate some sort of bias towards historically marginalized groups. Now, there are three categories of the racial microaggression, because this is essentially the type of microaggressions that we're going to be looking at on today's episode. So racial microaggressions have three categories, and they are micro assaults. These are explicit racial degradations expressed verbally or non-verbally. For example, the use of racial slurs. There's micro insults. These are a variety of subtle snubs conveying a hidden insult to the recipient perpetrators are usually unaware that they're speaking from biases. For example, some of you have maybe heard, you know, the "your English is very good." And then there's micro invalidations. These are characterized by communications that negate or nullify the thoughts, feelings, or experiential reality of a person of color. So an example of this is, "I have a black friend. I can't be racist." Now, unfortunately, black people as well as other ethnicities have to deal with a form of racial microaggression. Now, it's one thing to deal with it out of public spaces where you have the ability to call it out. So if you're at a restaurant or a grocery store, but what do you do when it's at your job? This is your bread and butter and you need this job to pay the bills. Or are you in an organization that is safe enough for you to call out the system? Or is it a toxic work environment in which you have to choose silence in order to keep your job, but at the detriment of your mental health? So I was doing some research. Let me just break down some stats for you. So according to the General Social Survey, a U.S.-based survey, from 2014 to 2018, 14% of black people said they face discrimination at the work in place because of their sex, race, or ethnicity, more than other demographics. Another one I found is a Gallup Center on Black Voices survey, again, another U.S.-based survey, found that in 2020, 24% felt discrimination at the workplace. Is that too far away from you? Well, let me provide you some stats closer to home here. A KPMG recently released research of 1,000 Canadian professionals who identified as black found that in the past year alone, 81% endured some form of racism or microaggression in the workplace. Here's another one. In order to keep up with the facade, women may code switch, which means they change their speech, appearance, and or behavior to blend in with the dominant culture. According to the McKinsey report, more than a third, so 36% of black women code switch at work. As a black woman myself, I've had my fair share of microaggression. People saying things like, "I'm very articulate for my kind." Don't know what that means. Or, "I'm pretty for a black girl." Let me just cue the eye roll. So why am I bringing this topic up? While it's important to celebrate women, we also need to listen to the women and create changes in systems that stifle them. While women as a whole have come a long way and have accomplished so much, there is more work that needs to be done. While I'm speaking in the context of black women, make no mistake, microaggression affects all women of all races and ethnicities. And so in honor of Women's Month, we are going to have these conversations about microaggression and toxic work environment. As I mentioned, this does not just affect black people. This does impact other races and ethnicities. It also affects men. But I wanted to have this conversation with somebody who can really give us insight, definitely define it and help us to be able to call it out, see it when it happens, and how to move in these places where they're toxic work environment and microaggression. So let's get into today's episode. Today's episode, we have somebody who is not new to the podcast. If you remember one of our earlier seasons, we discussed about mental health. So we've got a friend, a familiar face coming back here. Natasha, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited for our conversation.
And of course. Now, for those of you who are just coming in, because I do have some new listeners, could you provide us some information about yourself, who you are, what you do?
Yeah, all the things. So I'm Natasha Pennycook. I am an award-winning psychotherapist. I am a mindset coach. I am the leader of Natasha Pennycook Psychotherapy. We are a group practice that works with primarily men, women, others who are looking for mental health care. We have a lot of individuals within our practice seeking out care from a racialized lens, an anti-oppressive lens, an anti-racism lens. And we work with those who are really struggling with their anxiety, trauma, workplace oppression. We have a fabulous family therapist on the team that works with couples. You know, I also do a lot of mental health consultation for workplaces. We know that workplaces have been really struggling in terms of their DEI initiatives, their belonging initiatives, their mental health initiatives. So I go into workplaces to help them build a mental health strategy as well. So all these things, all the things.
All the things. I love it. All the things. Now, let me ask you, what made you want to become a therapist?
Yeah, great question. So one of the things that made me want to be a therapist is that, you know, I recognized early on, so when I say early on, probably in my teens, that, you know, family dynamics are one of the things that really shape who we are, how we see the world, how we navigate the world. And I really got curious really about how my own family dynamics shape me, but also how other people's family dynamics shape them, including our culture and our language, how that shapes who we are and how individuals intersect and how we impact each other. So that made me really curious. I always love to speak with people. I always used to love using my voice and psychotherapy and going into psychology really, and then being a psychotherapist was really like a natural fit for me.
Okay. So listeners, welcome Natasha to the episode. And so this episode actually was a listener's request. I had somebody reach out and they were like, I would love for a discussion to be had about microaggression and toxic work environments. And so it was just like a perfect timing because as I got the email, Natasha reached out to me. So I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So that's the episode. It's going to be microaggression and toxic work environment. So recently, Natasha, I don't know if you're aware, I'm sure you are, but in the news, there were two prominent Black women who unfortunately had to step down from where she worked, and the other one unfortunately lost their lives. So it was Antoinette Bonnie Bailey and Claudia Gay who I'm referring to. Now, with both situations, what was your mindset on what had happened?
Yeah, you know, both of these situations were very unfortunate, especially myself as a Black woman working with higher echelon individuals, high achieving folks, high achieving professionals. These two separate stories happened around the same time. So on all my social medias, people were talking about them. Things are coming up on my newsfeed. So, of course, I got into the conversation of what was happening. So for those of you who don't know, Claudine Gay was the first Black president of one of the Ivy League universities in the States. And unfortunately, she had to step down from her position. And, you know, even with that incident of what happened, what kind of led to her stepping down, there's incidences of questioning if she plagiarized and how that came out and how she even got into the position of being in that top seat, basically. So there's a lot of things that have happened around racism, really, and microaggressions and the things that as Black women, what we have to face, especially when we're in upper echelon leadership, right? We know for a fact there are stats out there that talk about that women and Black women, that we are not represented in these top tiers of leadership, that a lot of times these top tier leaderships, they're still owned and operated by white men. So now you have a prominent Black woman in this top tier leadership position. And what is there to support her in this role, right? Who's there to support her? Who's here to fight alongside her? Who is there for her to go to and say, you know what, I've had a really bad day and this is hard and this is tough, right? We know, and I'm sure your listeners can relate to this, just going to work on a daily basis, it's challenging, it's difficult, right? So imagine now you're going to work and you're not being seen, heard, represented, you're being questioned continuously. So I, as a mental health professional, someone who works from an anti-racism lens, I always question what was going on. Of course, I can't speak to it because I was not in her shoes, nor do I know her personally, but I could just imagine of what she was going through in these top tier positions.
Yes, I remember hearing it as well, seeing it on social media, and there was a lot of uproar, especially because of what you had said. What were the support systems for them? Why all of a sudden were they being let go? I think it was Claudine Gay's situation. Why she resigned. A lot of people, their idea on that particular situation was she was only there to fit a DEI incentive. Like it was just for them
checking
to check
a box.
Yes. And I could I wasn't sure at first when I did my research. I could now understand why people were saying that, because it did feel very DEI. A lot of people feel as though when the pandemic hit, it was a way for organizations and companies to fill out, really kind of hop onto the bandwagon, fill in these roles with more people of color, more blacks, what have you. And now we are, 2024, so we're 2 years, I don't even want to say post-pandemic, because we're still in it.
with the outcomes.
Literally.
Yes.
Now we're seeing everybody kind of like hop off, like it's a trend. And so I could understand in this particular situation with Ms. Gay, how that looks to a lot of people who are kind of looking at this with a side eye kind of thing. Now, I always like to try to relate things here in Canada. And so my next question is, we can easily look to the States and say, racism, racism, racism. But we do have racism here. So
we do.
Based on your role as a therapist, have you ever heard of situations like this here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. I know some people are still on the fact of, but it's Canada, it's a better place to live and everything. And yes, there are many intersecting variables. Yes, Canada may be a better place to live depending on the variables that you're looking for, but we also cannot negate the racial history that Canada has, whether with our Indigenous populations or our Black populations or other racialized populations, right? If we look right from coast to coast to coast, racism is something that has been prevalent and it still is very much prevalent. So we cannot negate the history that Canada does have a racial history.
Now, would you say, for example, in organizations, would you say for here, it is more quiet, subtle, where you don't hear it?
So it's interesting because we get this a lot. I hear this a lot where Canada has more adverse, overt racism, right? Racism that is kind of hush-hush in the back end versus a lot of times individuals talk about the States as having more overt, more covert, where it's like in your face, it's blatant. And, you know, it really depends. Honestly, it really depends. It really depends on the workplace, on the policies, on the people who are working there, really, right? If you're in a workplace where you see yourself as the only one, then the racism may be covert right in your face as well as behind your back.
Right.
Right. But if you see yourself more represented in your organization, and I'm not only talking about race, I'm talking about race and your ethnicity and your culture and your sexual orientation and your disability or your ability, right? If you see that more represented, then there's other people who can make space for you. So I think organizations nowadays, they're in a really, really interesting position where, as you have said, right, those DEI checkboxes that have happened around the murder of George Floyd and what we're seeing now, where a lot of positions around DEI and belongingness, how those roles are kind of the first to go as there are a lot of layoffs now happening. These roles end up being the first to go. And we know the people who are primarily in those roles, whether they're women or whether they're racialized folks with different intersectionalities and intersecting identities. So we have to understand, like, these organizations, if you're seeing the checkbox, like, okay, cool, I had someone in this DI role and now I don't have the funds, so this role is the first to go. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for your organization? What are you telling your employees about your company culture?
That's so good.
It's so important. It's so important. And you know what? What does it tell you about your company culture? How are you making space for mental health? Because if you really think about that too, right? When we talk about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, I like to throw belonging this in there. Mental health falls in there just as well.
Yeah.
Which kind of brings us to talk about Antoinette Bailey, right? Antoinette Bailey, she was a, again, Black woman, upper echelon in her field, one of the top leaders of where she was working and employed. And unfortunately, with her situation, she died by suicide. And she left a note stating that workplace harassment and bullying and racism were the reasons for her decisions.
Right. And that was so heart-wrenching, because I did, again, do my research on it, and she felt as though she wasn't being supported, right? So how can organizations work to create a more inclusive and supportive environment for racialized leaders to thrive in leadership positions?
Yeah, this is an important question, okay? And I think this is a question everyone listening who is in a manager role, a leadership role, even if you're a frontline employee, this is a really important question to be asking your HR or your leadership. What can be done? What can be done to support? So some of the things that I work with clients and organizations with is, how are you creating space, right? How are you creating space for individuals in your organization, for their different identities? How are you creating space? And that really means, like, are there days where you are celebrating different things that are happening? As we know right now at time of recording, right, we have Chinese New Year who just passed. Yeah. It is Black History Month. We got Black Mental Health Week that's coming up. So how are you making space for these different cultural festivals that are happening? Right? Mm. Are you letting your organization, people in the organization, know that we see you, this is important to us, not only important to the racialized folks, but it's important to the whole organization, right? How do you talk about mental health, for example? Is mental health something that is just kept hush, hush, quiet, or you're making space to say that, you know what, we understand that people's personal lives and professional lives intersect in the workplace. We are still people coming into the workplace, and we have our personal lives that follow us. So how are organizations making space for that? I think very importantly, and I had a couple of my clients who mentioned this lately to me, how are organizations making space for upper leadership mental health, right? Mm-hmm. If we really think about that as well, a lot of times there's talk about, like, frontline employees, and definitely we need to make space for mental health for frontline employees. We need to make space for everyone in the workplace, yes. Really, right? Yeah. But what about individuals who are at these upper levels? What are these people who, like Claudine Gay and Antoinette Bailey, who are in these positions, maybe the only one? What are the questions about their mental health? How are you dealing with this? How are you coping? Right? Sometimes it's really hard to be the only up there and feeling like I have all this weight on my shoulder.
I agree. I think also, as much as I don't like the term, I don't like it in the sense of the thought of just filling in a box, like the DEI thing. But I think having more people of different backgrounds can help, yes, as well for absolutely leadership, right? If somebody's above them who can advocate for them in a room full of non-blacks, you know? But as long as people are going to look at it as...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
A checkbox to be filled, I feel as though it's always going to be a constant battle for those who are in these roles to get the support that they need.
Yeah, I agree with you. We need to stop looking at it as a checkbox to fill this role. We have to look at it as, how are we making our organization more representative to our population? Right? So if we go from the mindset of, oh, this is a checkbox, I need a woman, check. I need a Black person, check. I need a queer male or a queer individual or I need a trans individual, check, check, check.
Right.
Cool, you're checking the boxes. But are you actually giving these individuals voice at the table? There's a huge difference than saying, okay, look at my table. It's great. I got all these different people, all these different intersecting identities represented. But are you actually listening to what they have to say and the voices that they're bringing and the perspectives that they're bringing? Right. I think what we really need to start talking about is, how do the systems need to change?
This.
How do the systems need to change?
Because it needs to change. It was now in the society that we're in, especially because Canada is so proud to call them multicultural mosaic country, especially the system needs to change. It's different. Yes. I mean, I still disagree with the states because the states, more my status, it's a melting pot. But in terms of a Canadian, we are so proud of being that mosaic. So if we're such a mosaic, we need to reflect that in our companies and our organizations.
Yes. 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 Don't be a mosaic again for the checkbox to say, ooh, look at this. I'm pinning it all together. Everyone looks different. It's really nice. It's great. But then the policies don't reflect support for these individuals. Right.
Yes.
We need to really understand that, okay, you have the biases that people come with, but we have to also look at the racism that's happening within the systems and the policies and the procedures and all of these things.
So, surprise, surprise, a lot of my listeners are not all Black. So, how can allies help to avoid situations like this in the workplace?
Yes, yes, yes. Love, love this. So allies, definitely. I like to think about this. Let's also change the language. As I mentioned, the language is really important that we use. Let's stop thinking. Ally is that. Think about this. Okay. Ally is someone like, yes, okay, go. I'm behind you. All of it. Cool. Let's start thinking of accomplice. Okay. When we start thinking accomplice, accomplice is like, I'm right there with you. If we're going down, we're both going down together. I'm with you. So I want the individuals who are listening, who see themselves as allies, let's up that a little and start thinking as accomplice. If you're seeing microaggressions, which we will talk about in a bit, if you're seeing, or if you're hearing jokes, or, you know, you're seeing someone who's like, oh my gosh, this person has a new hairstyle. Is it her hair? Trying to go touch someone's hair, right? Which that happens a lot. Say something. Don't just be like, oh, I don't think that was wrong. Like, say something. Like, that is not appropriate to say. We're not going to do that. There was something that happened recently at a makeup store recently. It was in the news. I saw it yesterday pop up on my news feed. In a makeup store where there was two individuals. I think one was an adult and one was a teen. And they're in this makeup store, two white individuals, and they're using darker makeup. To do blackface in the store, and they're making like animal sounds and things like that. And there was another white woman who walked up and said, this is not right. This is wrong. You need to stop and get out of my store. And there was another individual recording. So this is what I mean. You have to step up, not just say something in the background and be like, oh, this is not right. But what are you actually doing? Are you being an accomplice where you're right there in? And if there's something that's going to happen, that's going to be backlash, you're like, okay, I might take the backlash, but this is not right.
Right.
And I know that's hard for a lot of people, especially in the economy that we are in. We are in a hard economy. I'm hearing it all the time from different clients about layoffs and things like that. So people are scared for their job and their security and their families. So I definitely understand. But what can that look like, being an accomplice, on different ways where you make sure that there's some safety. Because the reality is, racialized individuals, individuals who look like you and I, Michelle, we don't really have that safety wherever we go, right? We don't have that option. So what are the individuals who have called themselves allies? And I hope after today, listening to this, you're going to call yourself an accomplice and think about what you can do to be an accomplice. Really, we all have to step up. If we want change to happen, we can't be waiting for the policies, procedures of upper echelons and organizations to be the one to make the change. We have to demand change.
We have to be the change we want to see, basically.
Yeah. We do. Wow. For everyone.
Yes. For everyone. Oh, I love that.
For everyone.
So, yes. How can we better support individuals who have experienced workplace bullying and prevent further tragedies like the one of Antoinette Unfortunate's passing?
Yes. I think that, you know, mental health is my love and my passion. I love talking about mental health. We really, again, it's the making space, but how are you creating a culture of care in your organization? And what does that care look like? Right. I was really fortunate to be at this dinner a couple of months ago, and I was sitting next to the CEO of this company. And the CEO of this company, who I've gotten to know over the years, had said something to me. They wrote a newsletter to their whole team, their whole organization, really, right? And they're a pretty big organization. They have offices in Canada and in the States. And he said to me, he wrote a letter to the organization sharing his own personal anxieties and mental health challenges.
Oh, wow.
Right? Telling everyone what they're going, what he's going through, and just laying it out there. And then ironically, at that same dinner, a random other employee came up to me and said, you know what? I really appreciated, no connection at all, conversations. But this person came up to saying, I really appreciated that this head of this company wrote that letter because it gave me permission to seek out my mental health support.
Wow. Right?
I absolutely love what this CEO is doing with the organization, putting it out there. So I say this to say, you're asking what we can do for support, right? We need the heads of the company to show up and to say, hey, these are my own worries, my fears, my struggles. These are my vulnerabilities, because it gives everyone else trickling down in that org chart permission to do the same. What it does, it creates space to have these conversations about mental health. And then for these employees, they know that, hey, I may be struggling with my mental health. Maybe I need to take a mental health day. They're not scared to seek out that support because they know that the head has already opened up that door.
Right.
So we need to look at how our whole organizations are being operated. We need to look at how can I make space for mental health? And it could be, honestly, it could be calling in a consultant like myself as an external person to come in and hold workshops, or even to say, okay, today we're going to have just an open space to talk about anxiety or what's going on in the workplace. How's everyone feeling about the layoffs that are happening? What are the fears? What are the nervousness? Right? Because we have to really understand burnout is real. A lot of people have been feeling burnout. As I mentioned earlier, we're still seeing the mental health repercussions of COVID, of the pandemic, where people have been struggling. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to shift focus a little bit here now, and we're going to kind of get into the nitty gritty, the meats and potatoes. And so we're going to get into the microaggression and toxic work environment kind of discussion. Now, for those who don't know, like to start off, could you explain what microaggressions are and how they manifest in the workplace?
Yes. Okay. So for microaggressions, even the naming of the word microaggressions, I really don't like it because the word microaggression, it centers not racialized people, okay? It happens to racialized people, but it doesn't center racialized people. So the reality is anyone that is Black, Indigenous, or person of color, when feeling that microaggression, it doesn't seem micro. Micro is small, right? Micro is small and teeny. It feels like a big thing. It is a big thing. So we really have to get, again, to changing our language. These are macro aggressions.
Okay.
For the people who experience them, they are really big. So microaggressions, macroaggressions, they're these slights that happen, right? They are these things that happen like, is your hair professional? Or like different things like lifting jokes or like, it was only a joke. I didn't really mean it. So it's these things that have a hurtful connotation. Things that I've gotten in the past is like, you speak really well. Yes. Where are you from? Right?
Yes.
You speak really well. Where are you from? Oh, you're educated? You have degrees? Like,
these God forbid.
Right? Right? But these are all the things that come from these biases and stereotypes that, you know, Black people are not articulate or not educated or all these other things that people take on as truth because of their biases that are really hurtful to the person and or group of people that it is targeted towards.
Do you find that these macroaggressions are deeply rooted with the media culture that we have? The perceptions of Black people based off what they see on TV? Do you feel as though that could be where it's coming from?
It is definitely a source.
Okay.
I would say it's definitely a source. It's a source because, you know, let's take beauty in the media, for example, right? The media industry is huge for beauty. We see ads all the time. Even with my little ones watching YouTube, beauty ads are coming up. Why are they coming up for cartoon shows? Who knows? But they're coming up. But if, like, when we see these standards of beauty, it's not you and I, right?
Yeah.
So if we have media that is showing these standards and people are watching it, this is what people take in as true or as beautiful or as the standard. And then what happens is, it's like, I've gotten this one too. Oh, you're pretty for a Black girl.
What? Me too.
Right? Yes. Yes. People don't recognize that is a macroaggression. That is hurtful. It's like, I'm pretty for a Black girl because based on the standards of beauty that media shows, Black people are not the symbol.
Not
of
it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, we have to look at what are we seeing? What are we showing our children? What are we ingesting ourselves? Because then we take that as truth, and then we say things that can be hurtful to who is directed to. And then this idea like, well, I didn't mean it that way. That was not my intention. But it's hurtful to that person. It is hurtful to that person because of all of the systemic stuff that we were talking about earlier.
And it almost like demeans you a little bit.
Not like it does. It absolutely, it's demeaning. It's hurtful.
Yeah.
It's heart-wrenching. It sticks with people. People end up thinking about like, what does this mean? Who am I? Do I have to change my appearance? Right? We know there's all the stuff. What was it a while ago? Like people bleaching their skin.
Right.
Right? To be able to meet these standards of beauty.
Right. I remember... I know in the States they're working on the Crown Act in terms of hair. I remember listening somewhere, I don't remember if it was a podcast or whatever, but it was more so along the lines of her hair. And she likes to keep her hair in she has a coily kind of fro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she was wondering with some of the macroaggressions that were happening at work, she wanted to apply for a position that would be a leadership role. But a lot of the macroaggression was making her think, well, will they accept her because of her hair?
Because of her hair, yes.
Like, was it going to seem professional to be that? And I believe she ended up straightening her hair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not too sure if she ended up getting the promotion based off of her hair or whatever, but she got the promotion and she fit the role. And then she realized that it's not... her, and it was also destroying her hair, but it wasn't her, and she was wondering if reverted back to her natural hair
issue.
would she keep the role?
Yes. It's those kind of things where we wonder, right? If we go back to kind of what we're talking about, Antoinette Bailey, the racism, the bullying, the harassment. So for this individual, thinking if she reverts back to her natural kinky coily afro, will she be accepted in her role or will she go through the bullying, the harassment, the questioning her leadership, the questioning her intelligence, all based on that? So we have to have these acts that come out, such as the Crown Act. Mm-hmm. And individuals listening, the Crown Act is a policy that was created in the States that you can't discriminate against someone because of their hair going in for a work position. So even though there's a Crown Act, what happens on the individual level or on the company level, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really, really interesting when we talk about macroaggressions and things that are aggressive in nature to individuals, to racialized folks, because we have to really start looking at how are these things that's happening impacting that person's mental health. There's a huge connection between equity, inclusion, and mental health. If we are not seeing ourselves represented, if we are not feeling like we belong, if we don't feel like there's space for us, then what happens is that we worry about being there. There's fear about being there. We may start feeling like, oh, do I belong? I can't be my best self because I'm worrying, and there's anxiety and there's fear and all of the stuff. So I want everyone to recognize from like the DEI initiatives that have been put forward lately, and also the layoffs, they're not only layoffs that are impacting people of different races and cultures, they're impacting mental health as well.
Right. So how can individuals address microaggressions with colleagues or supervisors in a constructive way without escalating the situation?
Yeah. This is a great question. It's a hard question to answer as well, because we don't know who. Because we're doing it as general, right? We need to know who the person is that you're going to. Have they been someone who has been very much an advocate for mental health, for race, for culture, for differences, for inclusion? Or is this someone who has blatantly shown that they have biases and they make racist jokes and things like that, right? So we have to understand who are we dealing with. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the first steps, it can be find a supportive community. So whether it is an individual in your workplace, someone that you can really connect with, it's someone else who may not be from, maybe not even someone from the same racial background or orientation background, someone that is showing that they're an ally or an accomplice that you can go to and say, hey, I think this has been going on. Can I talk this out with you? And I want to go and have this conversation with the higher ups. Who do you think I can go to with this? Right. Some people go to their HRs, they maybe write a letter, a complaint letter. And we know on one side, that's great because the HR is there. But on the other side, people have been worried and fearful to go to their HR because of the possible repercussions, right?
Yep.
So we really, really have to look at who is there and who is available. One of the first things is make sure you have supportive community, friends, whether it is you're even going to your family doctor or if you're seeking therapeutic support, letting people know that this is happening, make sure it's documented. So when you go and have the conversations, you have these reports to say, hey, this person has been talking about experiencing racism at work. They brought it to their family doctor. They brought it to their therapist. And then we can escalate it. So definitely go to the people in your circle, your support system, also in your healthcare provider circles who can support you.
Awesome. I agree with the HR. As I work in HR, I always tell Black people, document. Always document. It's very important.
Yes.
Now, are there any techniques or practices individuals can use to manage the emotional tolls of experience repeated macro aggressions in the workplace?
Yeah. So again, reaching out, having support around you is really, it's important and vital because it's that piece around belonging that here in the workplace, I may not feel I belong because I'm being bullied or harassed. So I can go over here where I have supportive people. And within that, then, you know, recognizing, am I feeling anxious? Am I feeling worried? Maybe I'm having a really hard time breathing at work. So you can do some deep breathing exercises, which can be really much like breathe in through your nose and hold.
Right.
Hold it for 4 seconds and breathe out. Just in that moment to try to regulate your emotion. Because a lot of times within workplaces, the anxiety is going to go up, the fear is going to go up, the worry is going to go up. And it's really hard to think clearly when feeling really anxious. So those deep breathing things can be something that you can really do. It may have to be that you take that you know, some people don't take their lunch breaks, they're eating at their desk. Take your lunch break, get out of the office if possible. Even if you're working online from home, close, like, you know, put your computer to sleep, go outside, take a walk, just to get outside and get some fresh air. That really helps to clear the mind. It helps to make more space for yourself. It helps to get those endorphins going. And there's a big connection between our physical health and mental health. So even just taking a little bit of walk, you don't have to go for a huge run in the middle of the day, but even a little walk, even getting some fresh air outside if possible. Also making sure you're getting some sunlight. Now it's hard for those of us in northern countries, right? I mean, it's kind of glary sunny today, but if you can get near a window, again, try to get outside. So these are little tips on how to manage that stress and anxiety during the day.
Awesome. So moving on to our second topic, which is toxic environment. Are there any warning signs that someone might be experiencing negative effects on their mental health due to their work environment? And if so, what can they do about it?
Yes. So I would say yes and yes. Recognize how you're feeling. I know this is really hard. A lot of us, we're not taught to check in on our emotions, right? But really start recognizing, are you breathing heavier? Are you getting tightness in the chest? Maybe you're getting those sweaty palms. Maybe you're starting to feel fearful to go into work. There's something that colleagues of mine call like the Sunday night scaries, where Sunday night, you start to be scared. You're not sleeping well, right? Because what's happening? You're already thinking about work the next day. So if you're recognizing that Sunday night, right? If you're recognizing that and you're having a hard time sleeping and you're maybe tossing and turning, then there's something, it's like your body telling you something is happening that you're worried about work, especially if you're not feeling that on like a Friday night or a Saturday night. Right? Just recognizing what's happening to you. So these are some quick warning signs that it could be related to work. Also, if you're feeling like really down to go to work, or you're feeling, some people get a lot of the tension or the headaches while working because of the fears of what can happen at work. These are signs to pay attention to. And if you're noticing this more on the regular, I will definitely seek out mental health support. So important. And then like the what you can do about it. So whether seeking out mental health support, start talking. Now, I know this is hard for a lot of people. You may not want to start talking to people at work, but start talking to people in your circle. So whether it is that you have a supportive friends or partners or spouses or some like family circles or girlfriend or boyfriend circles, right? Friend circles, start just talking that, hey, I'm starting to feel these ways. Make sure to reach out to people who have been supportive, emotionally supportive. And I stress this because sometimes what we do, we want support. We go to people who can't support us.
Yeah.
Right? Go to the people who have been supportive. I'm sure if you really stop and think, you have at least two people, everyone out there, two people in your life who you can go to, and just start thinking like, who can I go to really help me navigate? And those individuals may not give you solutions, but could help you to find other avenues to support yourself.
Natasha, we could talk about this all day.
We could.
Like literally all day. Listeners, if you want Natasha to come back, you need to send me a DM. We'll continue the conversation again, or a different one if you have one. Just to kind of wrap up on kind of a lighter note, I have a little question, a little fun question for you. If you could invite three famous people, living or dead, to join a therapy session, who would they be? And what do you think the session would be about?
Oh my gosh. That's a good one. Ooh, that's a good one. Okay. I know one for sure. So I would not mind. Well, not that I wouldn't mind, but I was very curious what therapy sessions looked like with Will Smith, with all the stuff that he went through.
Yes, it's a good one. Right? So is it going to be Will Smith or Will Smith and Jada?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not a couples therapist, but I do have an excellent couples therapist on our team.
There you
but
go.
I think for me, just because I have just like, I work with a lot of women. I love working with women, but I also have a few subset of men. And I feel like the men need the support.
Yes.
Right? Not that the women don't need support and not that queer and transgendered individuals. We all need support. But there's a special place for Black men in mental health because of the stereotypes and everything. So I would say Will Smith.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. And then others. So you said three people. Ooh. I don't know.
We can leave it at Will. I just thought maybe you had a plethora of people. Like, ooh. Hold on, let me give you my list. So no, that is a good one, Will Smith. You're definitely right about Black men and mental health. In one of my previous episodes, I was talking to a couple, Nikki and Dean Samuels, and Dean had mentioned about depression, and it made me think, yes, we really need to support our Black men because
they don't get the support. There's this idea that, again, the stereotypes, the macroaggression, the Black men are strong, they don't need support.
Exactly.
But listen, they need support as much as everyone else.
Yeah. And then my final little fun question. Yes. If you were to write a self-help book with a humorous twist, what would the title be?
A self-help book with a humorous twist. Oh, this is a good one. I don't know. Okay.
You think, eh?
You want to make me think. I'm like racking my brain here. Okay. Maybe something like better in or out. Talk it out. Something like that.
I like that.
Something about the importance of using your voice and talking. Yeah. Something. Yeah.
Better in or out.
Yes.
The book by Natasha Pennycock. I like it. Listen, if you write the book.
Okay.
We called it into fruition on this episode.
We're manifesting. Manifesting.
Yes. Manifesting. Natasha, it was so great to have you. We definitely will be doing this again soon in the future.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, if you could just give my listeners a chance to like figure out where they could find you by plugging in your socials.
Yes. So everyone, you can find me on our website, natashapennycook.com. So Natasha with a C, not an S, with a C, natashapennycook.com. You can find me on social media. Our therapy practice is on LinkedIn our therapy practice is on LinkedIn as well as Instagram, as well as myself. So everything Natasha Pennycook, natashapennycook.therapy on Instagram for the therapy practice, natashapennycook.ceo on Instagram to get me for coaching and speaking. So anywhere you put in Natasha Pennycook, Natasha with a C, they'll see everything pop up.
Nice. Well, thank you again, Natasha. It was a great conversation.
As always.
We'll definitely have to do this again.
A special thank you goes to Natasha for being on today's episode. It was a conversation that needs to definitely be had. It is a great way to provide knowledge to those that are not aware, as well as to validate those who have gone through microaggressions, as well as those who are going through it in toxic work environments. If you are going through it with microaggressions at work or toxic work environment, know that you are valid in how you're feeling. And just ensure that you create a self-care space for yourself, whether that is, as Natasha mentioned, going to a safe space, whether that is your nuclear support system. So if that's friends, really close friends, family members, also take time to take care of you and be gentle with yourself during this time. Really engage into some self-care, because what you're going through, it is definitely hard. It is not easy, and you need to be gentle with yourself and just really pour into your cup, because it does take a toll going through any form of toxic work environment or any type of microaggression. So I hope that you guys were able to gather some gems and really reflect on situations where maybe you have been in an area of toxic work environment or microaggressions, and what, now that you know the realities of this as an ally or as an accomplice, as Natasha says, what are you going to do moving forward so that the system can be called out and that we can ultimately lessen the amount of microaggressions so that we don't have unfortunate events of situations such as what happened in the States with, in regards to Claudine Gay, as well as Antoinette Candia Bailey, you know, so that we don't see situations like that again. As I mentioned before in the episode, be the change that you want to see in the world. And I think that being able to call out systems in these types of situations, as I mentioned, microaggression, that's the only way we're going to make impactful change. Now, if you enjoyed today's episode, leave us a review, rate it. Shoot me a message on Instagram. Shoot me a message on Twitter. Let me know what your thoughts were on today's episode. Have you ever dealt with any forms of microaggressions? Were you ever in toxic work environments? And what do you suggest when being in such environments? And I hope that this was insightful for you and knowledgeable. And I will catch you in the next episode.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.